All right, everybody, Lawyer Talk off the record on the air. You can check us out at lawyertalkpodcast.com, where you can catch the backlog of all our episodes going way back, maybe 4 or 5 years. Go to the old days and check them out. They're sort of fun. We take legal questions. We cover different topics. We've got a series. They don't teach you that in law school. You'll see. Just go check it out. Today, I'm going to do something I haven't done in a while. I'm going to do a legal breakdown. And it seems like the national media is screaming at me to do this. We're hearing every day on the news, there's a constitutional crisis. And I typically stay away from politics on this series, so I'm not going to get political about it, but I am going to talk about the legal stuff that they're not telling you about. The constitutional crisis, of course, is whether, President Trump's, executive actions, and particularly the DOGE with Elon Musk, are dismantling unconstitutionally the administrative state of government. And I think really the bigger issue is there were some statements maybe out of J.D. Vance and the Trump administration. I haven't listened to the whole statements, and sometimes those are taken out of context. The statements are such, saying something like they're not going to follow the orders of a judge that has issued an injunction against what DOGE is doing, or maybe the layoffs or the termination of federal employees, whatever the issue is. So that's the backdrop of this constitutional crisis. I think it makes some sense to break this down a little bit. So we all know that our country is not falling apart. The Constitution is not falling apart. And I'm just going to give some of the procedure on how it works generically. I may not even talk about DOGE or Trump or anything else again, but generally this is how this works. We have an action by the government. It could be a law. It could be something that Congress did. So the Congress passes a law. It could be a rule that came out of the administrative government. And say that impacts you directly. It impacts a business directly. And the business says, you know what? I think this law violates my constitutional rights or violates the Constitution in some way. And it impacts me in some way that I have standing. What is standing? That means it impacts me in such a way that the courts allow me to challenge it. I can't challenge something that impacts your constitutional rights. It has to impact my constitutional rights. We have to have standing. In other words, some stake in the outcome of it. So assuming they're standing and you want to challenge some government action, whether it's a edict out of the presidential or the executive branch of government, a rule out of the administrative branch of government, which sits under the executive branch, or a law written by Congress, or even your state, wherever you live, I want to challenge that law. So I go into court, and it could be federal court, it could be state court, but here let's take federal court. I pick a district court, and there's plenty of districts all throughout the country, and I file a lawsuit. And I'm filing a lawsuit to declare this government action to be unconstitutional. Meaning, I think this government action violates my constitutional rights. It's unconstitutional. Government's not allowed to do it. Now a district court judge has to make a decision on the constitutionality of the law. Generally, in a lot of these things, there's not even facts. It's not like they have to call witnesses because it's just a legal argument. The lawyers are just challenging the constitutionality of a law as it applies to their client. And what lawyers typically do, and what's happened in the scenarios we're seeing, is the courts then issue a temporary, or the lawyers ask for a temporary restraining order, and the courts issue one, or they decide not to issue one. What is a temporary restraining order? You hear the term TRO, which stands for temporary restraining order. What the lawyers are asking is the court to do this. While the case is pending, until we decide my legal suit, my request to declare the law unconstitutional, I'm asking you, judge, to issue an order that says the government can't apply the law to me or to people in my situation. And that is a temporary order. And there's a whole host of factors. I've talked about these on a number of different shows and media formats. There's a whole host of factors, one of which is the likelihood of success on the merits. The other would be the danger of irreparable harm. What does that mean? It means like if the government action, if the law continues to be in place, it's going to cause me some sort of harm economically, maybe my business goes out, something that is irreparable unless it's stopped. And the other big one that I always highlight, of course, is the likelihood of success on the merits, meaning, you know, I can file a declaratory judgment all I want against all sorts of things, but if I have no chance of winning, the court, when it is screening or trying to decide whether to issue a temporary order, The court can actually look at it and say, all right, I'm not deciding the whole thing because I understand you guys want to make your arguments. You want to brief the issues. You want to argue it in front of me in open court and in writing or whatever you're going to do. I'm not going to decide the whole thing yet, but looking at this on the face of it, I sort of think you're going to win, or I sort of think you're going to lose. And if the judge sort of thinks you're going to win, then the judge can issue a TRO, enjoining, meaning preventing, meaning telling the government, no, you can't enforce this order against this person or this group of people until I decide the whole case. And if the judge thinks, well, I'm going to balance all these factors, it's like five or six, but I'm going to balance all the factors, and not only are you not irreparably harmed if we keep this in place, you're probably not going to win anyway, so I'm not going to issue a temporary restraining order. Now, in recent cases, without going into details, there have been some judges who have issued temporary restraining orders, or one judge anyway, who issued a temporary restraining order. And that says, government, you can't do what you're trying to do, and we're not going to let you do it until we get this thing decided. And here's where the defendant's government is saying, nuh-uh, you can't do that. I'm not going to follow your law, or whatever it would be. And the government has issued an order that you have to follow the law. So generally, those types of orders, those are dealt with in contempt proceedings. But I think the big debate here is that there is not generally, like, say it goes, well, I'm ahead of my skis here. Let me back up. Say the judge issues the temporary restraining order, the TRO, and the defendant here, the government, doesn't like it. They can appeal. And so you have district courts. Those are like the local federal courts. Above the district courts, you have circuit courts. There's 11 circuits in the United States. And you would go up to a circuit court. So here in Ohio, if I filed a declaratory judgment action saying the government can't do something it wants to do, the next step, I would file that in district court. And if I lost, or if the other side lost, the next step would be a direct appeal to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in federal court. Then the Sixth Circuit could review whether the district court judge properly imposed a temporary restraining order, or properly denied a temporary restraining order. And then, of course, you probably already guessed it, if you don't like what the Sixth Circuit does, you can go up to the U.S. Supreme Court and have them review that. And this has happened in a lot of stuff in the last several years. Think COVID and some other implementation of TROs, where the U.S. Supreme Court has either declined or granted TROs or affirmed TROs, but they didn't decide the merits. Now, they sort of did, right? Because one of the considerations, remember, is likelihood of success on the merits. So sometimes you get these decisions where the U.S. Supreme Court hints around it. Yeah, we think that this is probably going to fail on the merits anyway, so we're not going to reverse the district court's decision or the Sixth Circuit's decision on the TRO. So we'll send it back. Or they may pick one of the other factors. Who knows? Or they may just say, we're not ready yet. We'll decide this on the merits when it comes to us, but we're not ready yet. For now, lower courts, you do your jobs, deal with it. So really, and then I saw an interview. I'll use the name again. President Trump the other day, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, says something like, no, we're going to respect the, I don't think he used the word respect, but he basically said, we are going to appeal the TRO decisions to the Court of Appeals. That would be whatever circuit court, appellate court, and federal court that would be directly above the district court. And then if they win there, the other side inevitably will appeal that to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that is not a constitutional crisis, folks. That's how things are supposed to work. Now, ultimately, here's the question. If and when the U.S. Supreme Court decides something, say we are going to approve a temporary restraining order on some of this stuff. Now the question is, how do they enforce it? And that's where the question gets sort of dicey, because there is no mechanism. It's not like the Supreme Court of the United States has an army that they can go enforce the order. And if you go back famously to President, it was Andrew Jackson, he shirked the responsibility of the Supreme Court at one point. But, you know, typically speaking, we all sort of respect the governmental authority. And so far what I'm seeing, that's exactly what's happening. Now, this is, if you turn back your history books, this is not unusual. I talked about this on another show. I just finished a book on a famous legal decision called Marbury versus Madison. And Marbury versus Madison, I'm not going to go into the depths of it, but it basically created this idea of judicial review, the very thing that I'm talking about, the idea that the U.S. Supreme Court can review actions of Congress and determine whether they are constitutional or unconstitutional. Now, that had to do with an ongoing debate between Adams and then his successor, Jefferson. And these guys were at odds. And Adams had passed in his time something called the Sedition Act. And he had arrested a bunch of people in the opposite political party, and a lot of people were prosecuted under the Sedition Act. Jefferson comes in and, of course, pardons everybody. Does that sound familiar? And it resulted in it all shook out and resulted in some legal decisions out of the U.S. Supreme Court the way it should. And guess what? They were creating the procedure as they went, and it still worked out. That was we're talking about, listen, Washington, Adams, Jefferson. We're talking about the first three presidents, and then Madison, Monroe, John Quincy Adams. You remember from history. But anyway, it's not the first time we've dealt with this. I don't think this is going to amount to a, quote, constitutional crisis. And I look, irrespective of where you fall on the political spectrum, this is not about that. Our system tends to work. It tends to work. It tends to endure the roller coaster ride. And I love it because I'm a lawyer. I'm not going to call myself a legal scholar because that's a little bit, I'm just not. But I love this stuff. I love reading about it, and I love learning about it, and I love looking at the history. And so go back in time and drop the rhetoric for a little bit and just sort of review how this is really working and how it's supposed to work. And I think you're going to find it is working how it is supposed to work. We have requests for temporary restraining orders. They have so far in one situation at least been granted. The Court of Appeals will review that. We'll see what that court does. Then we'll see what the U.S. Supreme Court does. And then we'll see if we ever get to this point where there's an actual constitutional crisis. I doubt it. I think that is a gross exaggeration. The courts work. That's what I love about being a lawyer. That's what I love about studying the law, is that it all seems to work. And guess what? And one more final point. It's not supposed to work perfectly. Nobody's supposed to get exactly what they want. The executive branch is not supposed to be all-powerful. The legislative branch is not supposed to be all-powerful, and the judicial branch is not supposed to be all-powerful. And if you're thinking, well, look, we can't get anything done as a federal government, well, it's sort of how it's supposed to be. You know, if you give one side or one branch all the power, then I firmly believe in the old Lord Acton quote, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Our founders believed in that. Our legal system is premised upon that. Our constitutional system is premised upon that. We're not going to fall apart, folks. There's not a crisis. The courts will sort this out. It may not go the way you like it on your political side, or it may not go the way you like it on the other political side. I'm not going to take sides. I'm just going to tell you, it'll work itself out. And also understand this. In the conflict, we get resolution. So a constitutional crisis, I don't know. What we have is a legal conflict. We have this notion that maybe the executive branch is taking on some authority that the other side doesn't like. And it hasn't been often, maybe never, that our U.S. Supreme Court has actually dealt with that issue. Our U.S. Supreme Court, maybe it's high time they do. So, you know, we might get some resolution out after we weather the storm. You know, there is no, nothing is ever easy, and our system isn't supposed to be easy. And the term that we often use is adversarial. In other words, it is a clash of ideas. It's a clash of arguments. It is one side pitted against the other side. And in that conflict, we get resolution. And if nothing else here, we're going to get some Supreme Court authority on issues, the issues of the day. What's the presidential power? What's the presidential power over the administrative form of government? What does the 14th Amendment have to say? And how should that be applied? You know, there's been many, many landmark U.S. Supreme Court decisions throughout history. And if we didn't have those landmark U.S. decisions, they wouldn't be landmark U.S. Supreme Court decisions. We wouldn't know what the rule of law is. So, and if you didn't have conflict, those landmark decisions never would have happened if we didn't have conflict behind them. And trust me, in the day of those decisions, the conflict probably felt as worse or as bad, if not worse, than it does now. What they didn't have in historic times is the mass media that we all deal with. So, again, don't hit the panic buttons. So as close as you're ever going to get to politics on Lawyer Talk, but I felt it's necessary just to give everybody the backdrop. And by the way, this stuff happens all day, every day. I've filed declaratory judgment actions in something as menial as Ohio's gambling law, and whether or not Ohio can pass a law banning, or the law that Ohio passed actually banned local skill games and such like that. So, this is normal procedure. It happens all the time, and it's happening now, just on a bigger scale with politics involved and media interest involved. So never fear. Our Constitution is well intact, and it will work, I promise. Lawyer talk, and one last thing. If you want me to cover a topic, I don't do these breakdowns often, but I do like to do them. If you want me to cover something, shoot me a message on the social media sites or send me a question at lawyertalkpodcast.com. I'll be happy to try to cover it. And if I can't, I'll try to find somebody who's got the expertise who can. So Lawyer Talk, off the record, on the air, at least until now.